It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's 10 past 10 in Northwest Ireland. It's 10 past 2 in Dubai, and that's where we're going right now. Good afternoon, Greg Hughes.
Thank you very much, Donal. A very good afternoon to you. You're very welcome along here to Dubai. This is surreal. I'm not going to lie to you. We're sitting in the beautiful Boddington Hotel here in Dubai. We arrived here yesterday morning, sort of getting our getting a sense of what we're doing here at the moment. But it's just remarkable, the connections between this country and our own country. And requests coming in left, right and centre too for Grania McMenamin, Levi and all her friends who are currently in Dubai. A big hello and hope you're having a super holiday from all your family in Stranorlar. And for Irene McNulty, who's currently teaching in Dubai, a big hello from all your family in Stranorlar. And there's Donegal connections wherever you look. And we're joined now actually by Dennis McGettigan, who's CEO of McGettigan's and Boddington Hotel. Dennis, good morning to you.
A very good morning, Greg. I hope you're well and all your listeners are doing well too.
You don't build anything small over here, do you?
No, I think that's more of a Dubai thing than an us thing, to be fair, you know. No, Dubai is just, I suppose the closest relationship you can create, or parallel you can have, is, I suppose, Vegas, without the gambling. But everything else is pretty much the same.
Tell us a bit about the company, because it's your father's company, of course. You're CEO now. And it's turned into, I think people might not realise the scale of it, actually.
Absolutely. Well, look, I suppose we you know, my father's obviously from Kilmacrenan in Letterkenny. He left school when he's a young man at 14 years of age, worked in the local bar there called McCafferty's, went off to work on the QE1 many years ago, and did that for about 8 years, bought a bar in Dublin through savings, a little bit of bank borrowing, called it McGettigan's. That was in Queen Street in Dublin. From there, bought the Bagot Inn, which was renowned for live music and all that type of stuff. And then he went into the hotel game, and we ended up with 6 hotels in Ireland, where he eventually moved out of Ireland and into London, where he bought the Boddington Hotel in London. And that's where this story, I suppose, was created. Through the success of that, he wanted to create a brand called Boddington. And in 2005, bought a piece of sand here in Dubai, which was a ballsy type of move at that time. Free zones had just come about, and it was the only time that a foreigner could actually buy 100% owned foreign ownership in Dubai.
Because before that, was it like a 40% local ownership, 6%? Is that?
Well, yeah, you had a 49-51.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So you were allowed maximum 49%. You would get a local partner involved. That local partner would become your partner, but for all intents and purposes, you did run the business. But it was still, you always had that, are you sure that you can trust your money is invested and it's yours, and you could walk away from it. But anyway, when the free zone came about, as I said, Jim bought a piece of sand here in Dubai, and then I was asked to come out and try and open it up in 2009, which we successfully did. And from there, it completely snowballed. We opened, I came up with a concept, a very modern version of an Irish bar here in Dubai. Came up with the concept in 2010, and we opened up the first McGettigan's here in November 10. And the success of that, after 4 months, the biggest alcohol supplier here in Dubai came to me and asked me, would we consider opening a second one? And it would cost me nothing, which is even better. And that was the franchise in Dubai Airport. And it was only at that time we realized that maybe there was something in this whole journey. So with that, we ended up with 22 of them. I think the biggest confrontation I had with myself was, can we export this product back to Ireland, and no better place than Donegal? I was very dubious about whether it would work or not. How do you bring an Irish import and export back to Ireland and try and make that work? So we opened it up when we bought the Clanree in 2013. We opened up McGettigan's there, and thank God everybody has been hugely supportive, and it was a roaring success. And as I say, on the back of all these things, we now have 22. We opened up obviously warehouse in McGettigan's Hotel and in the Main Street in Letterkenny. And that has been, we've been very lucky with the support, and I hope the delivery that we've given to the people of Letterkenny and Donegal and the wider area. You've got the same people. I hope the family, the McGettigan family ethos is there, even with all the wonderful people that we have working with us. And, you know, A, you try and design it as close to... Look, I'm not trying to be McDonald's, but look, what we do want to do is try and create a consistency in the brand, a consistency in what we deliver food-wise, drink-wise, and service-wise. And I hope that we just strive to continuously try and provide that for people. And therefore, in any McGettigans, I hope that you have the same experience.
Super stuff. Dennis, it's been great speaking to you. Finally, I mean, from a business, you're always looking, presumably, for scaling and boosting it up, aren't you?
We are. My father sometimes tells me to calm down, so I'm just trying to take it easy at the moment. But look, we're always looking and always trying to expand for all the right reasons if we can. So yes, look, an opportunity is only an opportunity if you take it, but you've got to see it first, you know. So we'll keep going.
Super stuff. Thank you very much for that. John Clifton is general manager of Bonington Hotel. What's the... The one thing that struck me about this place, John, good morning to you, is that like there are so many rooms available here, not only in this hotel, but all over the place. What is the clientele?
Well, it's very mixed, Greg, to be honest with you. I suppose from our point of view here, we're mostly corporate. I mean, as Dennis said, like when this hotel was built, there were very few towers in the JLT area. Now there's 80 towers, and each tower would probably be about 40 stories high.
And it's a mixture then, is it apartment? Not here, but generally a mixture then of apartments and then rooms to
Absolutely,
rent. Is that
yeah.
how it works?
Yeah, we'd have 208 bedrooms and we'd have 272 apartments, and it's a 40-story building. Mm. But I mean, the majority of our business is corporate. But I mean, in this island, this area, JLT, there'd be about 60,000 residents, and there'd be in and out on a daily basis, there'd be about 120,000 people coming in business.
So there's like an enormous population here of around about 1.5, and then a daily population of sort of like 3.4,
Correct.
Isn't it, million?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, excellent stuff. General manager of Bonington Hotel, given the scale of it, that's quite a task, isn't it?
Well,
I'm not sorry,
with Dennis it is.
Someone's written, I've given you promotion.
Yeah, no, it is. It's the biggest area we need to keep an eye on, I suppose, is the occupancies and how we work with the other hotels. And we're very lucky, as I say, we're very fortunate. The fact that we're an Irish hotel, we're standalone. We're the only individually Irish-owned hotel in this.
That's unique, isn't it?
It is unique, yeah, absolutely. And for that reason, we do very well. Again, as I say, a lot of our business is local in corporate. At the weekends, then we do leisure.
And in terms of before you come here and you read up, right, you would think that you can't really do anything as such, you know, that a lot of it's frowned on. But it's not really like that when you come here because, you know, there's different rules for different people, isn't there, really?
Oh, there is, yeah. I mean, the perception, I think, when you come here first is that it is strict, as in strict. But to be fair, I mean, the government here are very... fair in how they operate.
It's about respect almost, isn't it?
It is
than actually enforcement,
absolutely.
Isn't it? It's about just people respecting
respect.
Each other.
They do, yeah.
John, what's your actual title here? Because someone wrote down the wrong title for me here.
Yeah, it's Group General Manager of the Bonington Hotel.
Okay, I have it. Right, okay, very good. So it's more of a respect thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, everyone does what... It's just respecting each other's cultures or respecting each other's traditions.
It is indeed, yeah, absolutely. It is. It's very much down to respect. Okay. You know, locals here have a great respect for the tourist, and the tourist has a great respect for the local as well. Yeah. It works very well. But as I say, when people come in from Ireland, they come with a preconceived idea of how it is. But to be fair, it's a fantastic city. And when they do come
safe,
here,
the safety is
very
it's
safe.
Incredibly safe.
Yeah,
no. You know?
I mean, it really is. I'm here, as I say, 7 years with Dennis. And every year you are here, it becomes more of a home in the sense that it is so safe. When you go to other countries, then you realize how good Dubai is and how the UAE is.
And everyone I've spoken to, they are at a hub, if you know what I mean. For a lot of people, they might travel through here and go on to all the various destinations. You have fantastic access to wherever you want to travel in the world here. I'd say you probably don't get a chance too much, do you? But
yeah, well, with Dennis, I do. Well, to be fair, with Dennis, I do. I mean, I would travel with Michael and with Dennis.
Right, if we're going to be honest, everyone here just plays golf. I don't even know how he's managed to.
So we travel. We travel.
All right. Yeah. Okay, listen, it's been great speaking to you, John.
No, thank you very much, Greg.
Pleasure. Michael McBurty joins us as well. He's Group Director of Bars and also from Donegal. You have connections with the McBurty. You are the McBurty family, but people would know your cousin Frank McBurty.
Yeah, I'm Uncle Frank Edmure Foe, and my cousin Frank's a councillor, county councillor in Donegal. So I grew up in the the pub business from a very early age. I'm from Ballindrate outside Lifford, and my mum's still there in my family.
Yeah, that's so, a good pop for Lifford.
Yeah.
How big a decision was it to come here for
well,
you?
Well, it's quite a good story because we came here on our honeymoon, myself and my wife Claire, who's here.
She's looking at you so lovingly.
Yeah. So we came on our honeymoon, and we were here 2 weeks, and the height of the summer, it was June, it was very, very hot. And then I went to McGettigan's over to the, it was only JLT we had at that time, so I went to McGettigan's, and then when we came back from honeymoon, I met Dennis for an interview in Dublin, and the Bonnington, the former of the Regency, and that lasted all of about 15 seconds, I would say. And then I was on a flight probably 2 weeks later.
Dennis, are you the type that you sort of make an early judgment call?
Well, to be fair to Michael had come with very good recommendations at the time from our head chef downstairs. I didn't realise they were nearly like boyfriends at the time, but he highly recommended Michael. Look, it was a very easy pick for me when I got such a high recommendation, so it was easy.
Lifestyle-wise, though, I mean, I love Lifford, but this is very different.
Yeah.
Like, was that one of the hardest things to move?
Not particularly. I mean, when you come, I think that we were actually living in Liverpool at the time before we left Ireland, and I think that the lifestyle obviously is what you make of it here. I mean, it's I get loads of people who you lose people sending CVs and asking what he's doing. Everybody thinks that, as you say, you're out here playing golf and you're having a great time. But in fairness, you work hard.
Can I just say one thing? Yeah. I said the opposite of that. It was your colleagues that said that. Well, just for the record,
well, there's nobody at this. There's nobody apart from Eugene beside me here, I think, who plays golf.
He plays off 20, so like, the word plays, kind of, we have to be careful with that. We don't want to infringe on any copyright.
Yeah, look, I think, Greg, everybody works extremely hard here.
But is it like work hard play? I don't mean play as in burn a candle at both ends, but it gives you, if you work hard, you get your time to do what you want to do.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got all sort. You know, I think that in the weekends, like, which is a, you know, Thursday night here is a Friday night back home, and then the brunches are on Saturday or a Friday. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, you have to strike some sort of a work-life balance, but you can't go overboard either.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, you know.
Exactly. Now, we're coming into the summer here.
Yeah.
And it's pleasant now.
Yeah.
But it's going to become incredibly intense heat-wise, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be really hot. I mean, it gets into June, July, you're talking, it could go up to 50 degrees, sometimes higher. Luckily, you know, we have properties in Ireland, and we have a property in London and New York. So generally in the summer, I would get out of Dubai, myself and Claire and
that works
daughter.
Well for you, doesn't it? That's
yeah.
Great.
So we I would look between the pubs in Ireland and then go to London, and sometimes we go to New York, depending on what happens. So it gets us out of the heat, and then we all reform, and everybody's back to normal in September again.
Super
when the season
stuff.
Starts.
Excellent, excellent, Michael. You mentioned Eugene McMenamin. We might hand the McMenamin. I'm giving everyone the wrong titles now. McGettigan. Because there's Donegal connections everywhere, isn't there, Eugene?
Yeah, that's true, Greg.
What's your role within here and in the company?
Well, my cousin Dennis asked me in 2011 would I fancy coming out to Dubai for his trip. And I said, yeah, I didn't really think about it. And he said, yeah, would you like to come out? I said, yeah, okay then. He said, when do you want me out? He said, can you come out on Saturday? This was a Thursday morning.
There's a pattern developing here, you know. There is a pattern. I'm afraid to speak to him in case I'll be working here next week.
So I flew out here on the Saturday morning and arrived in Dubai. They got a car to pick me up, brought me to the hotel. And Dennis said, he said, go down to bar and walk about for a bit. He didn't give me a role to do or anything. So that was in 2011. And I haven't gone back since. I go back on my holidays every now and again, but I started in the JLT branch, first of all. It was our first one, and I worked there first year, and then we opened a new one down the World Trade Center, which I'm based now. And I haven't left it since, and it's a super place to work.
I was watching you in action last night. You meet and greet everyone, you know, isn't that sort of part of what you do as well? It's a welcome for everyone. I know there's much more to it, but it is that hospitality aspect of it that you bring as much as anything else.
Yeah, but it's a lovely role to have. You know, you meet so many nice people here. In the bars that we have in Dubai, that we never have trouble. You know, it's the safest place in the world to be.
You were telling me last night about, you know, if you leave your mobile phone down or your bag down, or there's no fear of it going anywhere.
No,
it's going to be there when you come back. And if it's not there, it'll be at the front desk. And if it's not there,
That's correct.
You'll get it back,
Greg,
anyway.
There's zero tolerance here. You know, we never have trouble in any of our bars. We have doormen there just to escort people, you know, to show them seating and that there, but we never have trouble. We have no fighting, we have no stealing, no mugging, no shooting, no trouble whatsoever. Zero tolerance.
You're here 12 months of the year. How do you find the summer here?
Well, I love Dubai. The summer's quite hot, you know, but we get cheap golf, so it helps in that way, you know.
Mm.
I set up a golf society here in 2012, so we have over 100 members of all nationalities, and we make McGettigan brand on our T-shirts, and we're sponsored very well by the Bonington Hotel as well. And we have our golf and bringer societies back to the bars, where we get good discount from Dennis.
Thanks for the invites.
It all goes down well.
Thanks for the invites. Your brother Seamus, of course, he sent a request in saying hello to you earlier on.
Oh, yeah. My older brother.
Older brother. Yeah. He's over freezing in Letterkenny at the moment, I'm sure. But you're loving it, living life, and you don't see Ireland in the future just for now. Obviously, you go back home and visit and stuff, but this is your life here.
This is my life here. You know, Dennis sent me to London there last year for a while. You know, we have a bar there as well, and it's doing very well. So I went over there for 6 weeks. I loved London, but thankfully he said, I want you back here in Bag, and so I'm excellent. Back here.
Excellent stuff. Listen, great to chat to you. Dennis,
thank
just
you,
talked about the prices here. The price of alcohol is, you know, it's up there. Is that about sort of not discouraging drinking, but what would be the motivation behind that?
The motivation behind that, I think, look...
It's about 12 or 13 a pint, isn't it?
Sure.
Now, I know Temple Bar is busy, but this place gives Temple Bar a run for its money.
It does. Look, I think we have to remember where we're at. And you know, this is a predominantly Muslim world out here. I think the attitude of the Muslims who we all get on exceptionally well with here, their attitude is, look, you guys want alcohol, we'll make sure that you can get alcohol and it's acceptable to get alcohol, but we will make sure that there is plenty of tax on that alcohol. Do you know what I mean?
So it is tax.
Well, just for argument's sake, to put things in context, for me to buy a pint bottle of Magners in this country, retail, is about nearly €6.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
so that'll
mm-hmm,
give you an indication where I could buy it in a bar, in some bars, I'm sure, at about $4, $4.50.
And then, of course, you have to factor in then profits and all that kind of
exactly,
stuff. And then that,
exactly.
That's still expensive, even from a retail perspective.
A pint of Guinness costs me, for argument's sake, about €4.50 to buy.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
And at home, it would be half that, would it?
Oh, at home, you're probably into, God, I don't know if the top
now, there might be some bar owners listening at home. We don't want to get too much
away. Okay, I won't go there. Sorry, Diageo.
And you also, Diageo, you've got two bars in Letterkenny.
I know, exactly. Yeah, I'll be hanging myself.
Yeah, okay. Listen, and I just want to speak to Pat too, because also what we're going to be speaking, we're also going to be speaking to some people working here, you know, the teachers. Dennis, now mind yourself. The teachers and nurses too, that are choosing this life, and if not here, they could be in Australia, whatever. We're going to talk a bit more about that, but we're going to take a break. But Sean McFadden, it's another story whereby you just came out on holiday.
Yeah, we came out 2 years ago on a holiday for my wife, and she fell in love with it, and we're here since.
And so, originally from Letterkenny?
Originally from Letterkenny, yeah, Beechwood. I mean, I was born in Beechwood. I was brought up in Ran, and I worked for Donegal County Council. And we came on a holiday 2 years ago for Irene's 40th, and we weren't on the plane
She's
on the
love
way back.
You for that, by the way.
And she was Googling straight away, looking for jobs
wow.
in Dubai.
Excellent. You know? And a teacher, was a teacher at home teaching locally, was it?
She was teaching in the girls' school, in Letterkenny, and she was there for maybe 15, 16 years, and we, you know, she taught all over the world, and we thought about moving to Spain or moving, you know, somewhere warm, and we come to Dubai for like 4 days, and she just
pure
loved
coincidence.
It. Pure coincidence.
Yeah.
And when we come here, we just couldn't believe the Madeiris that was here.
Yeah.
You know. So
now, we were
like,
speaking before we came on air, so I'm not going to say what we were speaking, because I don't want you to say stuff that you... But in terms of... terms and conditions here, it's very different to home. You were saying that, you know, your accommodation would be paid for example. How much of that is
a- Yeah, like over here, that for some reason they want to bring more people to Dubai, so they give good packages, if you want to put it that way, you know. So they want good people, they want good teachers, good staff, good nurses, whatever, to make... Because I think, like, in the last 15, 16 years, there have been no oil in Dubai, so they're trying to make money those other ways, you know, and this is what they're supplying. And like, and when you're getting that as a package, it's very hard to turn it away, I suppose, you know, as a family. Like, you know, when you're living in Ireland, you have to pay mortgage and this and that. We're here, the government and the whatever it is, they seem to subsidize that for us.
But that makes people feel more worthwhile. And one of the things we hear at home from, it's not just nurses and teachers, there's other, it's a sense that, you know, even if you were paid, it's not a sense of worth, in other words, that you can walk off whenever you like, and we're not going to try and keep you, we're not going to try and persuade you to stay. And that's a horrible environment to work in for lots of people, I think. But here, she's incredibly valued. What's that, Dennis?
Sorry, here your net income, like, you have your insurance, you have your flight every year, you have your accommodation, you have possibly, you know, children's allowance so far as educating your child. So here, your net income, the whole purpose of this is your net income is your net income. So it's for you to do what you want with, and that if you drink, that's your business. You smoke, that's your business. You want to send it home to your family, that's your business. But it's your net income. So what you see on your salary slip is what you take home.
But how do they pay for everything here? Someone, if it's not through, you know, taxation, you know, that's at the end of the day, you know, we want everything that the biggest countries in the world want to have at home, but you are sort of maximum taxing, you know, 3 million people to try and achieve that. It's different here, and maybe that therein lies the problem.
Fair enough. And I'd prefer not get into a thing Ireland versus here.
No, really. Not at all. But comparison.
No, sure. Well, the way I would look at here, look, there's no income tax and there's no corporation tax. What they have brought in here recently is VAT, so there's 5%. On all hotels and all restaurants, there is a 7% levy on all bills. So if my bill is 100 dirhams today, it's 107, plus service charge, another 10. You know, so 117. So they're making indirect taxes, they do have, for sure. Do you know what I mean? So your utility bills, which is, you know, primarily up to the employers to pay those utility bills, but your utility bills are probably that little bit higher. You know, your various commodities, you know, speed and fines.
Speed and fines.
They have plenty of ways of stealth taxes that they do have, that they do manage. And as I said, the alcohol here is priced, you know, before I buy it, there's at least 35% added on to the alcohol once it arrives in the country.
Sean, your life is here going forward, is it?
Yeah, well, yeah, we're here, I suppose, for 2 years. Like, we're going to stay 2 years. We've signed a 2-year contract. Like, but as I said to Eugene and the boys, I said, like, when we have to leave here in 2 years, if we leave in 2 years, I have no doubt it's going to be very hard to settle back in Ireland, yeah, living the lifestyle here. You know, it is so nice.
Because
people
would know you from you're a very athletic gentleman, let's put it like that.
Yeah, well, back in home, we've done a lot of races. But here, I actually thought Donegal was like a competitive county. Here, it's you could be racing here night and day as well. Yes, you know, there's triathlon clubs here called Tri Dubai. They've got 7,000 members on it. Like, you know, it's phenomenal. So we'll stay the 2 years and then we'll reassess and then we'll see what happens, you know.
Okay, excellent stuff. Listen, thank you very much. We're going to head back to base and take a quick break. Stay with us here. Loads more guests for you to meet here at the beautiful hotel we are in here, the Bonington Hotel in Dubai. But we'll go back to studio for a break and rejoin us in a couple of moments. Okay, you're very welcome back to Bonington Hotel here in Dubai. Hopefully you're still picking me up loud and clear. We are on the other end of the world. It's really quite remarkable, I suppose, that we can connect at all. You just heard some great music there. We're going to have a bit of live music here at all because very shortly, because this is the crazy world that you've got, you know, a fantastic artist who's getting lots of airplay through John Breslin and through the likes of Jimmy and Paul. And he's here. He's here in Dubai, so he's going to do a song for us as well. The Coronas are here. They're not going to perform for us, but that's the kind of place it is. You bump into all of these people. Who's Who of Horses is here as well. But most importantly now, I want to speak to Dee O'Connor, who is a nurse. Dee, good afternoon, is it?
It is. Yes.
It is. Good morning.
Afternoon.
Listen, thank you for coming on. Your story is an interesting one because you very reluctantly, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth either, left working a hospital in Dublin, didn't you?
Yeah, I did not want to come here at all whatsoever. I worked at home in Crumlin, the paediatric cardiac ICU. I've worked there for over a decade now at this point, and I found myself in a situation that I couldn't afford to buy property at my age, and it was
So you could see, I don't mean this ignorantly, but you could see the top click, clock ticking. You knew where you wanted to be at a certain period of life, but there was no pathway to that.
Yeah,
in the Dublin
absolutely.
Environment.
At home, rents were colossal, and I was 37, and looking towards, I suppose, wanting to have a mortgage taken out by the age of 40, and wasn't going to be able to do that on my wages. I had saved a deposit, but the gap between what you'd be offered on a mortgage and what you could actually buy property with was well over 60 grand. So my decision was forced upon me, so I had to leave the cardiac ICU up in Crumlin and come here to try and make up the difference if I could.
And you wouldn't have been on your own. You would have seen colleagues making similar decisions.
Yeah, we would have lost in the last year, we would have lost four senior cardiac members to moving to the Middle East.
These are really important roles in Irish hospitals.
Yeah, I would have been junior, I suppose, there with, I'd say, 10 years experience behind me. So there were people at both end of the scale are leaving when it comes to nursing, that you have people who are just coming into the profession that realise that they're looking at a colossal mountain ahead of them, but also people who have mortgages out that then realise that they're going to have to not only have people renting with them to pay the mortgage, but they are going to be more so, they're also moving and leaving, and leaving families behind to go to the Middle East.
For a person in the business of caring, was it like, you know, you had to make a personal decision, but I presume you also considered, or you were conscious of the fact that, you know, you were moving from a country where you could be caring for people living in Ireland to a different, did that form part of any of your thinking process?
It did, but I got to the point where I realized I had to care for myself.
Yeah.
And that was my priority, was me at that point. So I left behind my partner at home and moved out 9 months ago.
Or six. You think it's six, but you've been reminded it's nine. When you hear comments like, you know, Leo Varadkar last year and his comments say, for instance, you know, we're urging nurses not to take Christmas off, and I know that upset a lot of nurses. Does that kind of validate your decision?
I don't think upset was even the word you could use. We have been caring for people for quite a long, long amount of time, and I think it's time that the government start caring for us and start meeting us halfway. I know they're in the Labour courts as of the 25th of March. It needs to be done. If people at the upper end as well as the lower end are leaving, well, something needs to change, basically.
Yeah. And people say, just in this whole conversation, people will say, well, sure, look, Ireland can never compete with Australia. It can never compete with Dubai. You're wasting your time even trying. The conditions are fine in Ireland. How big is the gap between where we're at for nurses in Ireland and where it would need to be, where someone like you would say, actually, you know why that? Well, I really would prefer to be home if I could do that. Is it a big gap?
It comes basically down to money, so it does. Right. But when you look at the figures, I know they spent 19 million in agency fees last year. If they actually just changed packages
the model,
that people were being offered, those positions would be filled and you wouldn't need to be invoking agency staff to fill those positions. Mm. I know people that have left their actual jobs and have worked two-day weekends two or three times a month and have come out with the same pay packet.
Yeah.
And they get to work in the same hospital that they have worked in. So you're the way that the agency system is working, it's
and then you have this scheme too, where we've got massive hospital waiting lists, but we're spending money on the National Treatment Purchase Fund to get those people off the lists privately. But if that money was invested again,
and at different stages, wards have been closed because they don't have the nursing staff to man the wards. If those wards were opened, they would be able to.
And we're exactly in that position at Letterkenny University Hospital. We have a 20-bed short stay ward. They're opening 10 beds now, but the big delay is about staff and getting the approval for staff, because a bed, when you say open a bed, it's not about the bed, because beds are 10 a penny.
You have to have the amount of nurse capacity there to manage
that bed. And that's what it's about. So are you frustrated with Ireland? Or
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm frustrated
with
the...
I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth again either, but you know...
Oh, absolutely. I would like to be at home with my family, with my partner and with my friends and with my work colleagues. But I can't financially afford to stay there. And that's the end of it. Mm. That is the bottom line. I can't afford to do it. So I have to look after myself and come out here and make my future a reality. The way it is at the moment is that I suppose people my age aren't able to buy their own properties. That's one issue. Down the line, when you retire in a pension, and I don't think people have foreseen the end of it, when you retire in a pension, your pension has been created on the premise that you own your own property. If I can't survive on my wage at the moment, there is not a chance in hell that I'll be able to rent a property on a pension. that I will get at the end of the day. So that's what you're looking at. So you're looking at being 65 and being put in that position, which I refuse to accept. And I'd be at the upper end of the scale. I know my friends at the lower end of the scale that have joined on the two-tier system that was invoked by the government are in a very, very difficult position.
What are you feeling, what do you think your colleagues feel about the INMO and the deal they struck? Because it was a huge decision
It's in the Labour courts at the moment, so we'll wait and see. What has been offered to them is not acceptable. From, say, a person in my perspective who's in intensive care, I've put 9 years of college experience into where I am at. I am dual qualified, so I would be able to get a dual qualification allowance. I could get my intensive care course allowance, or I could get the stress pay allowance for working in intensive care. You are not allowed to claim all three. You're only allowed to claim one. So the deal that was offered to them would not entice me to stay in intensive care, because if a lot of people are able to get different advantages that would belittle what I have gotten, there'd be no incentive for me to stay there. I'd much prefer to move out and have an easier life.
Do you have a plan, like you're going to work here for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then go home?
It's a short-term plan. My partner is at home and I prefer to be there. So I would stay here until I'm financially viable to move home, and depending on the deal and depending on what the government has offered will depend on what kind of an area I would go back to. Would I choose an easier place to work, or would I go back to the intensive care that I absolutely adore?
Dee, thank you for your insight, and it's really invaluable. And it's that type of conversation I wanted to do this, because we talk an awful lot at home.
Yeah.
And you know, you can speak to people and they can say, I know a friend here, there and everywhere. But to speak to someone like yourself, who so clearly would love to be doing elsewhere, what you do at home.
I think this time last year I was working during Storm Emma. And I think a few people might remember little Holly that was there, the snowman that was made for Holly. That was me. Day that I made that snowman was the day that my license was granted and I knew I was emigrating.
It upsets you, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, let's see. I wish you were at home looking after us, but you will be hopefully soon enough. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, thank you for having me. That is Dee O'Connor there. I mean, it's a really important conversation, that, I think. Laura, how are you?
Claire.
Beg your pardon. Sorry, I beg your pardon. Thanks very much, producer brought with me. what do you do here?
I'm teaching over here. I teach maths in a secondary school.
What's it like?
I really enjoy it. The kids here are really great, and it's just such a nice lifestyle, really. You work hard, it's early starts, later finishes than I was used to, but it's very rewarding, really.
And is this a lifestyle choice for you, or is it a choice you felt you had to make, or...?
Well, I was working in the UK before I came here. Okay. I was working in Liverpool. I had been there for 13 years, and just... I had looked into moving home, and really the opportunities weren't there at home. Yeah. So I had been on holiday to Dubai and decided that I would come over. I wanted to come over. I spoke to my husband about it, and he had never been. So he was quite willing to move and start a new life over here. So we thought that was the time, just after we got married. So we moved over, and really we do enjoy it. We like it. It's nice to get home. And we do go home at least twice a year.
It's a 7 or 8 hour flight. If someone goes to Lanzarote from Dublin, it can be 5 hours with a headwind. I mean, so it is accessible, isn't it? And as I say, Emirates, they do an amazing thing in the connections between Dublin and here.
There's two flights a day from Dublin, and that is the only direct flight to Ireland. But we've travelled home. At least twice a year. We've got a almost 2-year-old son who comes home with us, and he's well used to the travel time now, and he's well used to the journey home. So we're looking forward to getting back in the summer.
And do you stay here during the really hot months?
No, because I'm teaching, we finish up at the beginning of July. So we normally go home for the summer months.
God.
Which works out well.
That's how the other half is living. I'm delighted it's going well for you, and you see it as a long-term thing.
Well, we're just going with the flow at the moment and taking it year on year, and just we'll see how things go, really.
Listen, thank you for speaking to us. It's
no
been
problem.
Lovely. We were speaking to Eugene earlier on. His son Barry works here as well. Completely separate. You were here first, Barry, weren't you?
Yes, I actually moved out.
Because I didn't think the story was going to play out like that, you see. I thought it was like Dad would be over here.
No,
he
chased after me.
Didn't he? Yeah.
Well, I moved out probably 6 months before him. It was pretty much at the time McGettigan's Bar was just opening. I don't actually work with McGettigan's, but I work in the retail industry, particularly with the shopping centre environment. The company I work for is Landmark Group, and they have basically the Pennies of the Middle East, so they have a lot of stores all over the Middle East.
And what do you like it?
Love it. We're 8.5 years.
And we're going to speak to your partner in a moment, but you've just had a baby, haven't you?
She's sitting over there in the corner.
Very quiet. If your dad was half as quiet as the baby, we'd be all right.
She wasn't quiet last night,
it's
fantastic.
That's only in the recent, last week?
Just 1 week.
And Aaron, isn't it?
Aaron,
God, I've got a good memory. I was told that last night. Aaron, born in Dubai, but will never be, have Dubai citizenship.
She will never be a citizenship,
like
no.
That, yeah.
Unless I married a local woman.
Well, that's not really. I think we can leave that conversation off air.
I think that's gone.
Oh no, all in now. To use
I'm
a
all in. I'm all in. Neighbor's passport. We're actually just in the process of getting the birth cert and the passport now.
And I've asked the question a few times, and I know it seems obvious, but it's one that intrigues me. Have you a plan? Are you just taking it a year at a time?
When we originally moved out, it was again short-term basis. But as the years went on, you get a little bit more settled and adapt. You create new friends. There are more friends actually move out. My brother's actually moving out, Rory, in September to do teaching as well. So you get comfortable. I don't think it'll ever be for life, but you know, for the next 3, 4, 5 years. For sure, we'll be here.
Caroline is your wife. Caroline, I was going to say your original name, it sounds so clumsy, but your maiden name, you're from originally from Fannad, aren't you?
Yes, Caroline Callaghan, yes.
Caroline Callaghan, okay. And you're okay with all of this? You're happy with this plan?
Yes, I mean, initially I was teaching in Ireland and I didn't have a permanent job, and I thought, yeah, we'll go for a year or two. And I didn't think we'd be here 8 years later, but we really have settled and we're enjoying things. Such a vibrant Irish community here as well. And
it is a home away from home.
It is. And really, your friends, you know, mean a lot to you out here. You need that Irish community around you, and it makes a big difference. And I suppose we're lucky to have that. And I'm lucky with the teaching that I can get home twice a year, like Cliona mentioned. It does make a big difference for me because I do miss family, friends at home, but it is great getting home in the summers, Christmas time.
Yeah, I'd say so. And in terms of starting a family here, is that something you consider? If you know what I mean, like, shall we have a child in Dubai, or do we need to go home? Is that something that comes into the...
You weigh up all the options, but I suppose I could see myself working in a school. You know, fantastic opportunities for children here.
Yeah.
And after we got married and we were still here a few years later, we decided, this is somewhere we could consider raising children.
It's home.
And we will go home. I mean, we could be here for another few years. I would like to go back home eventually. But it's a great place to be right now. And we won't forget our roots or where we came from, but we're enjoying it for now.
People remember you from the Rose of Tralee as well, of course.
I did that a few years ago. It's 5 years ago now, but great memories as well. And I came back then, and the Donegal Rose that year, a good friend of mine now, Catherine McCarron, and myself came back after doing the Rose of Tralee. And we have a very strong Irish community here, as I mentioned. The Dubai Irish Society would run many events here every year, but myself and Catherine set up the Dubai Rose Centre, like a subcommittee within their committee. So every year now we would run the Rose events here in Dubai. And it keeps those really strong links with home.
And Zoe McGettigan too was...
Yes, Zoe was the Donegal Rose, as well.
All over the place, yeah.
So every summer that brings me back to Tralee. So there's strong links with Dubai and Ireland.
And listen, do you know that stuff they say that you make friends for life at these competitions? Is it true?
It really is. It really is,
There's that one thing in common and it's there forever.
Definitely. No, I have to agree with
Excellent.
That.
Excellent. And do babies sleep at night in this country like they don't in Ireland? Or?
I'm sure it's like no matter where you are in the world, it's just going to take a little bit of getting used to.
Exactly. But it's a wonderful thing. It's fantastic when you get a new baby into the home.
We're absolutely delighted and want to say a big hello to all the family at home and all the well wishes we've received in the last week.
Brilliant.
It's just been great.
And any idea when Erin's going to go home for a visit?
Hopefully she'll be home with me in the summer.
Lovely. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You've agreed. agreed that.
Yeah, we've agreed.
You're saying hello to your people. I also want to say hello to Michael and Kathleen Snodgrass, who are listening to us in Strabane. Their daughter's here as well. She won't speak to me, but that's that. We all where we're at. We've said hello to Mum and Dad, sure, and that's all that matters. And we're broadcasting at least part of the 9 till noon show today, live from the Boddington Hotel in Dubai, if you don't mind. And Jimmy Nolan joins us now. Jimmy, how are you?
How are you doing, Greg?
I'm all right. You don't sound it, but you've got good, strong Donegal connections, haven't you?
Yes, married into Donegal about 15 years ago. So my wife is from Mallon.
Yeah.
And we have two kids, so we go up quite a bit. I'm over here for a couple of days because the Dubai World Cup is on Saturday.
Talk to us about that race, because people may or may not know you're some people would know you, I think, particularly in circles of horse racing, because you laid a bit of a bet and you come out of one meeting with 204 grand, which is all right, isn't it?
A little bit of luck, yeah, every
a little
so
bit
often.
Of luck. Okay, all luck maybe. But here, talk to me about the significance of this race in the horse racing sort of calendar.
So this is the largest horse race in the world. So Dubai has been, I suppose, an international home of horse racing for many, many years. Sheikh Mohammed, the ruler of Dubai, obviously he has a massive passion for racing and horses. And where the race is on in Maidan is one of the most spectacular race courses really in the world. No expense spared. It's fantastic. And these horses travel from Japan, America, Europe, Brazil, Argentina, everywhere. And it's really it's an international meeting as such. So some of the horses that will run, we wouldn't be too familiar with, because obviously we don't get to see them that much. But it's kind of, it's where the form and all these horses really race against each other. And we kind of find a level of, you know, where everybody is.
We were at a launch in McGettigan's, the other McGettigan's bar here, and it was the who's who of horse racing. I mean, it was quite remarkable. You bump into people and, you know, it's big.
Yeah, this week is a big week for them out there. So my connection with that would be David Murnan, who trains racehorses in Tipperary. We are related through marriage, and he trains a horse for Dennis McGettigan, who you were speaking to earlier. And it's funny how the circle all comes around. You know, that's the way these things work. So last year they had great success. They had a big winner at Royal Ascot, which was celebrated far and wide internationally, from Donegal to Dubai, I'd say.
Now, explain this situation here where we've got the biggest horse race in the world and you're not allowed to bet. Mm. Now, you're not allowed to bet until recently in Portugal, but you know, there are people who would use a VPN and try and circumnavigate that here. I don't know how many people would chance that here because it's quite strict here.
Yeah.
How do you have... There's no betting on the course, right?
No,
you've got
no.
The biggest horse race in the world. Everyone's cheering on.
Yeah.
No one's allegedly betting. How does that all work?
So I suppose that most of the people who are here... don't really have an interest in betting as such or gambling on these. These are the very best racehorses in the world testing themselves against each other. Some people could call this the Olympics of international racing, which it really is. So, you know, you'd have people who are genuinely interested in seeing who the very best is. And remember, it's not really about gambling for these people because, you know, horse racing, racehorses have a long life after they race in terms of the breeding shed, as they call it in America. So, you know, these horses to win a Dubai World Cup and potentially become a stallion would be far more lucrative than you and I having a fiver on them.
And I'm not 5 euro on anything. But anyway, not unlike these buildings here and the height of them, presumably the horses to some extent too is a bit of one-upsmanship there as well.
Look, there's absolutely no doubt about it that these, you know, it's called the sport of kings for a reason. It's an expensive sport, and yes, they do like to have the very best racehorses. So if they can potentially breed them or buy them or, you know, have this fabulous horse. It is really a feather in their cap.
Some of our jockeys would come over here for months on end, mm-hmm. So they would kind of disappear from our TV screens or the newspapers if you're watching that kind of stuff. They do a couple of months here, don't they, and then go back and they start doing the Ascots and the Sandowns and all that kind of stuff back
so, at home. So they kind of, our winter, when the flat season finishes around November, we would potentially have a quiet time. And a lot of the jockeys will come out here until the end of March, which is traditionally when this racing carnival finishes. And I think they have a really good life out here as well. You know, they're up early, they work the horses in the morning time. But then, you know, normally you've got fabulous weather, and I think they genuinely like it out here.
Yeah. Tell us about who's going to win on Sunday. It's Saturday night, isn't it?
Saturday night, yeah. So it's obviously we're 4 hours time difference here, so it will be on early at home.
Who's going to win it? That was the question. You boys,
who's going to win?
You always go each way. You'll never give a straight answer.
Yeah.
It must be reputation thing.
It's hard.
Because over here, it's a different type of a course. There have been some question marks in the past that the course hasn't been necessarily fair.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the race can be over before it's, you know.
Yeah, the draw is very important, but where your horse is drawn.
It's a bit of a fairer kind of a setup nowadays, is it?
Yeah, they've worked hard to try and make it, you know, that there isn't what they call a track bias or whatever. But it's hard to equate the form, the international form. All I could say is that if anybody was, especially with the large Donegal connections out here, it's a fabulous place to visit and go and watch, you know, some of the greatest racehorses in the world racing. The Dubai World Cup itself is the big race. It's the last race, and the horse that won last year, I think you know, he might take a little bit of beating, but I would say that it's more, you know, a watching brief, because it's great to see, you know, the best of the best.
Okay, listen, lovely to speak to you. Enjoy.
Thanks a million, Greg.
I don't think you actually told me who might win that race.
I do fancy a horse called Muntaza in one of the races.
Okay,
so if he doesn't win, it'll be all tears.
So the bookie ain't getting the 204 grand back anytime
soon.
No,
definitely won't be getting that. My wife has it.
Okay, listen, thanks, Jimmy. Brilliant character, actually, Jimmy, and he knows his stuff. I want to say hello to Claire is here, and we were speaking to her hubby a little earlier on. I want to say hello to Colm and Josephine Coyle listening to us in Strabane as well. Claire, a quick word with you, if you don't mind. Just to let Colm and Josephine... Oh, Kathleen, is it? Josephine.
Yeah, Colm and Josephine. But my friends are texting me here, telling me to shout out to them. Anne-Marie, Sinead, all the kids from Donegal. Hello.
And you wish you were back home with them, do you?
No, I think they maybe wish they were here with us.
Excellent. We were chatting to Sean earlier too, and his son Sean and Kira, his daughter Kira, both of course McFadden's listening to us as well. Claire, how long have you been here?
I've been here now 7 years. So
you haven't lost the accent.
I think that's because we're just surrounded by Irish people.
Is that comforting, or at the same time, do you feel maybe you're not getting quite the experience you might get if you... You know, because it does feel very much like a home away from home here.
No, I think, we like it. We like our little community, don't we? Our Irish community here.
And you're here for the long haul, or?
We'll go with the flow as well.
Everyone says the same thing. And there's no shame in that. It's just that maybe we worry too much at home. We have to plan everything for years ahead. Whereas over here, everyone's so relaxed over here. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, we are going to wrap up. Thank you very much, Claire, for speaking. This lady beside you is still not prepared to speak. And I'm thinking of poor Michael and Kathleen not getting a word out of you.
Oh, hi, Mummy and Daddy.
And your name is?
Terry.
From Strabane as well. Okay. And you've done it now. Thank you.
You're
happy here too, yeah?
Yeah, really happy.
Okay, it's nice for Mum and Dad to hear you. Thank you very much. It's nice for your Mum and Dad to hear you, so thanks for speaking.
I know.
Seamus Byrne joins us now. It's his first time on the radio, and I didn't get a chance to warm you up, so we'll just have to wing it. Seamus, you are different to most of the people we spoke to. You've been here over 4 decades.
We're here for 44 years now. We came here in 1975.
And tell us about living here for you. What's it all about? Is it a lifestyle choice? Is it a business choice? Or?
Well, I left home when I was 18. I went to England and then I went out to America. And from America, I came to Dubai. And I came to take up a position with a drilling company in Dubai. And that was the way I was introduced to the drilling business over here. And I worked for a local company for 1 year. And then I've been working for myself for 43 years.
You must be a very important man, Seamus, because it's the first time no one's been shouting in the background since you come on. St. John's Point, the lighthouse in St. John's Point, you can't get any closer, really, to America from that part of the world. Originally born in Ardra, but you were raised there.
Yes, I was born in Ardra. My mum was from Aya, which is outside Ardra, down the Nick. And myself and my sister Mary were brought up and reared at St. John's in St. John's Point Lighthouse, and our nearest neighbour at that time, and still is a mile away. So we just the farm, cattle, the family all together.
And what a switch up, really, isn't it?
Pardon?
A switch up from that lifestyle to this, 44 odd years later.
Yeah, well, at that time we had to go either to England or to America, whatever. So I opted to go to England. I worked for Tarmac a little while, and then I got an opportunity to go to the States, and I went over on a student exchange program, and I went to Villanova University on a student exchange deal. And then after that, I got the opportunity to come to Dubai, which is what I did in 74.
Now, nothing happens truly by coincidence, because that would do a disservice to the effort that it goes into. But you need a bit of luck along the journey too in life. Did you ever imagine you'd be in this line of work over here now for so long?
No, you know, you take it one day at a time. Like every job, it's not easy. We've had our ups and downs. We've been through two Gulf Wars, recession, two or three recessions. We've been almost gone broke in our own business two or three times. So you survive all of that and you come back stronger and better for it.
Oil is a finite resource, obviously. Is that the still predominantly where you work? And do you feel that soon, or maybe you're already doing it, you have to sort of look at other avenues?
Well, you're always on the lookout for opportunities. But working with companies like Shell, which we have been working for 34 years, can't do any better than that. Amoco is another company we worked with, and Arco as well. So these are the top companies in the world that in the drilling business. So if you're lucky enough to have an opportunity to work with these companies, you try to hold on to that position.
We have some resources off our coast, but we kind of signed all the rights to that stuff away, really, as far as I'm aware. How unusual is it for a country to give away their natural resources like that, I wonder?
Yeah, that's a good question. Over in the Oman, where we're drilling at the moment, the concessions are all allocated by the government. And Shell got the main concession called Petroleum Development of Oman. They're the largest. They pump around 700,000 barrels of oil a day.
Wow.
And then we've got BP, who have come in there also, and they're pumping quite a bit. And Occidental as well. So three major companies. There's another company from Ireland called Circle Oil. I don't know the name of the guy, but they have a concession there, but they haven't started doing any drilling yet. So the government controls the companies that are actually allocated the licenses to explore.
Yeah. So it's a win-win. The country gets its share and industry gets its share. Talk to me about this relationship with the barrel of oil, because my diesel only keeps going up. What's happening there? Do you switch the tap off just to drive the prices up a bit? Is that how it works?
You'll be changing over to electric in the next couple of years.
I'll be changing over to electric sooner than that, but anyway, go on.
Yeah, the price of oil obviously fluctuates so much. It's down to $50 a barrel at the moment, or thereabouts, 57, I think it is. But we've had experience of $140 a barrel.
Wow, yeah.
And when you think about the high price of the oil, you think about the 5-year and 10-year programs that the government have put in place. So a 5-year plan at $140 a barrel is workable. But when the price goes down to 50, that then becomes a 15-year plan for the government. So it creates all kinds of problems for the government and the spending and infrastructure and what have you.
I didn't realise it was that far in the future. And it's not as simple now, is it, as say, for instance, your Ryanair's, your Emirates, buying oil while it's at $50 a barrel. You know, you do hear that sometimes, but does it work as simply as that?
I don't think so. A lot of them do hedge their bets with regards to the pricing of oil and buying forward. And they've also caught a cold doing that, so it's down to the individual airline themselves as to whether or not they should do so. Maybe O'Leary would be one of those guys who would take a chance and buy forward.
Seamus, it's been great speaking to you. We're broadcasting from Boddington Hotel here in Dubai, and I think it's been interesting. I hope you found it interesting, because it's interesting to hear, people's stories from Seamus Burness, we've just heard right the way through our list of guests. Stay tuned. Scott Mayhew is going to be singing for us very, very shortly. But first, I want to speak to Nicola O'Donnell, who's an Irish teacher from Letterkenny. Been living out here for 4 years. Nicola, lovely to have you. So speak to you. Lift that microphone up to yourself there.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for having us. It's great to be on, and it was lovely to listen to Seamus talking about his experience here in Dubai. It isn't quite 40 years, but this is my fourth year here in Dubai, and it's great to see such a good community here today.
And
like
you're teaching. Are you teaching Irish?
I'm not teaching Irish, but I'm teaching in a UK curriculum school. I'm teaching English, maths and science.
And how's that going for you?
Yeah, really enjoying it. It's actually been Teacher Appreciation Week this week.
Oh, so you've been, so does that mean you get pampered? And
we've had flowers, we've had messages, we've had...
Who organises that? Is it the school or is it the government? Or
the school organise it. Our head teacher is fantastic. She is very, very concerned about well-being of children and staff, and that's one of her main focuses. So this week, she has been organizing lots of events for the staff in the school to promote well-being. So one of the things that they've invested in our school is they've invested in mindfulness training for teachers. So for the past 3 years, I've been studying mindfulness here. And they have provided that training from companies from America.
And that is just for no other reason as such as to just improve the life of
yes,
their staff, really,
yeah,
effectively.
The thing I love about teaching here is they are they're concerned about the holistic, they're concerned about the whole child.
And that trickles down to the child. Sorry, yeah, that's exactly the point you were making, going on to make there. Obviously, you've got friends and colleagues at home, and I certainly don't want to come out here and sort of run down what other people are doing at home, you know. But I think it's important to, you know, if a government minister, for instance, were listening, maybe a minister in education, for example, that they could hear the reasons people are making these decisions that they are. So how different is your teaching job here to that in Ireland in terms of how you feel you're treated, how you're rewarded, how you're looked after, etc.?
I feel very, very well looked after. I feel staff well-being is a huge focus, and another focus is training and developing staff. I have had so much training while I've been here. I've done courses in America, Coach U, corporate training course in leadership, and then I have done other courses in mindfulness with a psychologist from Australia. So they fly people in, they invest in their staff, their teachers. They want to see their teachers do well, and if you're still learning, that's really important. I always feel I'm not actually a teacher, I'm still a student. I think it's important to never ever stop learning.
Exactly.
I think
you're interested, and you're not going through the motions. Not that other teachers do, but they're all taking a picture now while I can't get into it. Thanks, lads. That's lovely, that is. But it's funny when you start seeing people come in here with their Donegal connections.
It's brilliant to see the room full of all of these Donegal people.
Okay, yeah. Excellent. All doing really well. Are you the same as a lot of people we talk to, that you're seeing how it's going, and... Or do you plan on being here for the long term?
I plan to be here for 2 years, and I would love to move home tomorrow. I miss all my family. I miss all my friends, my mom and dad, Mary and Patrick, and hello to Deirdre and Joey. They're actually traveling at the moment as well. And happy Godmother's Day to my mom in advance, and my godmother Rose McGettigan, who I'm sure is listening at home, and all the Irish mammies. It's really hard to be away from home when there's big family occasions and special events.
Of course, you feel you're missing out.
So I would love to be home tomorrow, but I'm enjoying Dubai.
What changes? Is it improved conditions and improved money at home? Is that the decision maker at this stage?
I don't even think it's money. I think the opportunity for self-development
exactly.
here.
Yeah, I agree. Like, and we must always consider that the people yeah. make decisions to travel, and they always have.
Yes.
Whether it be in Australia, America, or here, and it's about your own personal development as well.
Definitely.
Isn't it?
And one of the biggest things that like teaches me is traveling. Like the stuff I have learned from just visiting countries nearby. In February, we were in Nepal, and like just from meeting the people, we actually traveled to Banapa. It's a small village, like 1 hour outside of Kathmandu. One of the like cleaning staff in our school, she was home visiting her family.
Yes.
She hadn't seen them in 2 years, so she invited us to breakfast with her family.
What
they came,
honor.
They met us at the yeah. airport, and like to just to like be around the world and like to witness the hospitality and how like amazing people are around the world. Like people like that never met us before
yeah.
welcomed us into their house, cooked us breakfast, and invited us to like meet their neighbors. And like I think that's like one of the best things that I can do being here, is to travel, because it's
Brilliant.
What teaches you.
And you're, as you say, you're all about learning still. Nicola, it's been lovely speaking to you. Got a shout out for your family as well, which is great. Continued success and happiness and development, and this appreciation week. There's never a journalism appreciation week. It's quite the opposite. But listen, I'm hoping you're enjoying yours, okay?
Thank you. Thank you for everything.
All right, thanks. That's Nicola O'Donnell there, teaching. Right, we're going to finish off here with a bit of music here. Kevin, you might grab this for this gentleman. Scott Maher, you'll hear him. He's on Highland Radio at the moment. I think, were you on with Paul and Jimmy on Monday Night Sessions, were you?
I'm not sure.
Oh, you were played. You were played for sure.
Yeah,
I know
I played,
that, but
yeah.
you didn't get up to visit them yet.
No, but I will.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And an old John Bresson is pumping your music out there. You're from Dublin.
I am, yeah.
Is this normal for you to come out here? And
yeah, I do the winter months out here, so for McGettigan's. So I play all the McGettigan's bars
excellent.
And sit in the sun, really.
Touchdown Part 2, how's that going for you?
It's gone well, yeah. It's difficult when you're an independent artist, but
I think it's slightly easier now, because you can get your music out, can't you? Whereas before
there's good platforms.
Yeah,
exactly. Yangaroo is a platform I use at home that delivers good kind of service. So
brilliant,
yeah.
Yangaroo. Okay, yeah. As I say, you've heard. What are you going to sing for us?
I'm going to sing Touchdown.
Okay, good.
Two,
people
yeah,
will be listening on the radio, so we get to. Do you just where would you prefer that mic to be?
Actually, probably about there.
About there, perfect. All right, then. This is Scott Maher live here, and we'll play out with this one. By the way, back to studio. Thanks to everyone who helped here, and the fantastic hospitality we had from the management and owners and staff here at the Bonnington Hotel. I'll be back on air with you next Tuesday, but to play us out here from Dubai, believe it or not, it's Scott Maher with his new single, Touchdown, Part 2.
Cabin lights are dimming, captain calls the weather, it's -3 degrees outside. Day tables in the upright position as the movie ends and the credits begin to roll. And I don't want to face this night without you, I just want to go home. I just want my feet upon the ground, I want a touchdown. Touchdown. Ooh. All the toy cars below, they're weaving and dancing like ribbons of light. I see the runway approach beneath me, and I get that feeling that I'm almost home. I don't want to face this night without you, I just want to go home. I just want my feet upon the ground, I want a touchdown. Ooh, I want a touchdown. Ooh, let's try to keep it moving, keep it moving. Like forever, I just want to hold you, hold you. I want to touch down. Ooh. I want to touch down.
Touchdown. Thanks, guys.